Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We got the four of us here. We got DJ, Tron, and Big Randy. We're going to get to our interviews a little bit later with...
Real microphones with Big Randy.
Real microphone with Big Randy.
Yeah, what's up with this? Makes me uncomfortable.
Some unbelievable reporting from Big Randy in the field this week. The true journalist, rising star in the game. But we're going to get to our interviews in a second here with Curtis Luck from the victorious team Tron and Mr. Edward Lohr from the non-victorious team Solly. Through no fault of his own. But I wanted to debrief a bit on the experience in Greenville and at the BMW Charity Pro-Am and turn it over to our champion of the bet, Mr. Tron Carter.
I was going to try to be sporting about this, but these guys are kind of goading me into, hey, you know, gloat a little bit.
I ran a dirty campaign.
You did run a dirty campaign.
I did.
There was a lot of negative ads, negative energy. I think I rose above it.
The cream rose.
Yeah. The cream rose at the top. I had a terrible, terrible practice session on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'd like to say I was not putting out misinformation trying to move the line at all. It was that bad.
Tron was so bad that he had thrown clubs so many times that he let one fly that hit me hard in the shoulder.
I wasn't throwing clubs.
He'd finish his swing and then let him go and just launch him. And
I lost $200 to Solly on
It was
Tuesday.
So bad, it was an occupational hazard for a lot of us that were watching.
We don't even have workers' comp insurance.
I know.
With NLU,
luckily, so. It worked out. You just, you know, rub a little dirt on it. It worked out okay.
But, yeah, I think – and then I tweaked my neck a little bit, too. So I legitimately visited –
Rhomboid.
Yeah, my rhomboid was like – I think I've got some inflammation on my spinal column. So I saw the physio every day legitimately on the range.
And due to the amazing fundraising efforts of our followers, we threw out there that if we raised $15,000, you would wear a full-length Phil Mickelson Mizzen and Main shirt during the competition, which I thought was going to work against you. Biggest upset of the week?
100%.
Tron actually pulled off this look.
It looked really good.
Much better than Phil does.
I think it pains all of us to say
that
really looked spectacular.
I'm going to wear them once the... Once the temperatures cool off, I think if it's above 80, 85 degrees, it gets a little rough. But once the temperature cools off and the humidity comes down a little bit, that's going to be my look.
So. Well, we just want to, again, say thank you to everyone. We set out like an internal goal of raising about $10,000. We would have considered that successful. We, with BMW, matching all donations of 50 or greater up to $10,000. We hit that. For an extra $10,000, I think we ended up somewhere around $34,000 raised for our two charities, which are
Evan Scholars Foundation and the Greenville Children's Hospital.
So. We'll be doing the raffle drawings shortly here for everyone that contributed to Team Tron.
Well, I think we're going to do it. I said Monday night. I think we're going to do it Tuesday night. I want to be back in Jackson do it with you guys and stuff.
So, thank you to everyone for donating. This was really inspiring. I thought that was really cool and kind of to see everyone rally around this dumb little competition we threw together, and we had a lot of fun with it. And
together, anything's possible.
Yeah, seriously, that was awesome. So, Big Randy, have you been to Greenville before? Is this your first time?
No, and I actually have family in the area. So, that's not true. let me back up. I do
Fake
have
news.
Family in the area. That is true. I've been on the outskirts of Greenville before, but this was my first time to downtown, and you know, had heard great things from Tron, who was here last year, and I was like, really, Greenville, South Carolina? Oh, okay. But yeah, really, really cool downtown. Just a very lively
Main Street
food, restaurant, bar, very walkable, some really cool architectural features, great coffee shops,
which we'll get to.
Yeah, it was lived up to, exceeded expectations. Very cool trip. Glad I could make it.
DJ, this is your first BMW Charity Pro-Am. What was your initial reaction to it?
I loved everything about it. I mean, it was it's cool to see three different courses. I think all of us kind of like to see and analyze and talk about and play, you know, as many courses as possible. So it's cool to see a bunch of different spots. And just, I mean, the we've all been to a million PGA Tour events and big, you know, kind of big scale events. And for me, like for my money, it doesn't get better than the Web Tour and Champions, where things are just kind of so much more laid back and the guys are so much more accessible and the guy, you know, nobody's stressed out. Nobody's hassling you about credentials and, you know, all the, like all the things that I totally understand why they happen at PGA Tour events and how you have to kind of keep things reined in and controlled. But out here, I mean, it just, it feels like the way I imagine the PGA Tour felt in 1980 or 1975, you know, where it's just, it's just a little more chilled out, and it's just
traveling road show.
It is, yeah. It feels, yeah, exactly. It just feels like kind of a traveling circus or a more intimate traveling circus, and you're kind of out there, and it's just great. Everybody knows each other, and you still obviously get to, you know, watch the golf up close, and the players are, you know, for by and large, you know, the players are just as good. It might not be quite as top heavy with, you know, superstars, but
we played behind a guy with a green jacket.
Yeah, I will. That is actually a great point. I will never forget. Maybe the lasting memory of this week is just, you know, obviously pace of play is a little sluggish out there on every tour, but standing and watching Mike Weir up on a tee box waiting to hit a shot, turning around, watching a guy with a fake name on his caddy bib hit a wedge into the green. That was like,
what a world.
Yeah, what a world.
And Derek Ernst is playing behind us. He's won one Quail Hollow a few years back.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really, really, really cool. And the celebrity aspect is cool, too. I mean, it's weird to be, you know, it's weird to be walking around and you know, you're grabbing a plate of salad and you see David Wallace from The Office, and I saw I got one of the kind of bit characters from Mad Men out there today. I mean, it's like
dinner
fun.
Last night, Aaron Rodgers,
yeah, you know, yeah, on kind of, I mean, a similar right. level star, yeah, yeah. Aaron Rodgers,
Carlton, aka Alfonso Rivero, was asking if there was going to be an open bar during the rain delay on Friday.
Yeah, it's just, I loved it. Couldn't have had more fun.
That's what we were laughing, was we were playing the 10th hole at Furman, and Alfonso was playing like 13th or 14th and was on our hole, and we're like watching him. We're kind of jabbering with him a little bit about how far left he was. And sure enough, when we came through that other hole, I hit it over to that wrong hole as well, as Max Homa's coming up the fairway, and he almost sprints up like, yes, I cannot wait to watch this
You
shot.
Had the Callaway staff bag, though, not the America's Funniest Home Videos bag, this which is true. What he had.
This is true. It was fun to just kind of have – because watch the web guys kind of have fun with all the shenanigans we were pulling as well.
Randy, so. I don't know how you feel. I think it was more fun to watch and just rag on Tron and Solly and make jokes than it actually would have been to play inside the ropes.
I agree. I think I had mentioned to you earlier, you know, there were maybe 10 shots. I was like, oh, man, I'd like to hit that shot. And the rest of the time, it was like, oh, I'm kind of glad Solly and Tron are hitting those shots.
You know, when the lights are brightest, though.
Yeah, we would have shrunk from the challenge, for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, nothing with ability. Just like, dude, I was having a good time just strolling and,
you know,
and
the Wags,
watching a little golf. Yeah, making some jokes with my guy DJ. Yeah, it was great.
So free beer for everybody, or dollar beers for
dollar
everybody.
Beers after Magnanimous Tron made the birdie on number 9.
He got his redemption on television.
I was signing balls for kids. You know, I felt like I did. I had
and
some experience.
Homeowners as well.
Yeah, homeowners. I signed a glove for a homeowner. I had some experience from last year. I think I put that to good use. And you know, we'll have to figure out what it looks like for next year.
You're chumming it up with the producers of Golf Channel to make sure your birdie got
yeah.
Got
yeah,
shown.
Yeah, saw John Swantek.
And a little bit of payola going on.
So with that, we want to say thanks to everyone at the BMW Charity Pro-Am for having us out. And as long as they will have us, we will keep coming back. This was fun week for everyone, for the NLU fam and extended fam.
And so, thanks for donating. I know we mentioned that, but that can't be said enough. It's cool that we get to go around and do fun, dumb things. And, you know, that's cool in itself. But when we could do that and raise a kind of way more money than we thought we could, that's
kind of
awesome.
Staggering.
Yeah, it's great.
So
yeah, I say it was just humbling. It's humbling to kind of be associated with that. Very cool. So for sure, thank you, everybody.
With that, we're going to turn it over. Our first interview is with Tron's partner, Curtis Luck, and then after that will be Edward Lohr. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll check back with you next week.
Hey, folks, Patriotic Tron here. Let's take a minute to talk about the new Stars and Stripes Chrome Soft Truvis golf ball that Callaway just released. It features Callaway's popular Truvis pattern in patriotic red, white, and blue design. all of which is very fitting since Callaway's Crimp Softballs are all made in the USA. Actually, in, I believe, Western Mass, Chicopee, Mass.
That's correct.
This ball features everything you've come to love about the Chrome Soft, including the graphene-infused outer core, which allows Callaway to engineer an incredible-feeling golf ball that's low spin off the tee, which with increased shot-stopping spin around the green. So you can stop your shots without having to backstop on the green.
Even though Dirty Tron was backstopping during the BMW
Charity
Pro.
No, it was a team competition.
Okay.
So
yeah, that totally justifies it.
So we're playing against the field, so that we're not protecting the field. But yeah, anyway, Solly, before I was rudely interrupted, Stars and Stripes Chrome Soft Truvis golf balls are actually on the shelf right now. They went on the shelf this past Friday, May 18th. So visit CallawayGolf.com for more info. Be sure to pick up yours before they're gone. They're also available for purchase at select retailers. So stock up for Memorial Day coming up, U.S. Open, and then, obviously July 4th.
Fly the flag. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah. Come on, people.
All right, welcoming in from Team Tron, victorious Team Tron, Mr. Curtis Luck. What do you have to say to the people?
We are the champions. I just want to thank all the supporters of me and Tron, particularly Tron, because I know he's got a lot more fans than myself. But, it was a great week out there. Not for Solly and Ed, unfortunately.
It was not.
But it was awesome for me and Tron, and to come away with the victory is just a great way to finish the week.
How would you describe the margin of victory?
A lot. As simple as that. Me and Tron discussed it earlier this week. We thought for a while there it might not have been, that fair that you were off scratch this week, Solly. But,
There's been a lot of talk about my handicap, which I think my handicap was fine. I think it was just your handicap was two shots too low.
It was. It was way too low.
People were calling me a sandbagger.
You're not a sandbagger.
You've watched me play.
I agree with that. I think Solly's handicap was the one that was out.
It would just got artificially low at the wrong time. I'm very well aware that
he's
I'm
a reverse sandbagger.
And that happens. But unfortunately, you just timed, I guess, your golfing expertise wrong whilst you're at Bandon Dunes. You shouldn't have been cleaning it up over there.
It was hard not to take the adamant nature of your, you're definitely not a scratch. It was hard not to take that part personal, but I'm recovering. I'm very well aware of this, but to hear it from the outside, I'm not going to lie, it stung a little bit, but.
I'm not sure I said that.
You emphasized it.
Oh, did I? Yeah. Exactly. I do recall saying that I believe you're like one of those people that likes to just tell people they're a scratch golfer.
Which is actually not true, but.
I'm not sure about that.
I'm very comfortable as a two. I'm not a scratch. I'm very well aware of it. But we're talking about how we were going to potentially do something where I'm going to try to qualify for the U.S. Open next year. And when I told Ed that when I was about 9 over through 11 holes, and the pause that he made before trying to find out if I was serious or not was enough to let me know that I've got a long ways to go.
You're sitting with a guy here in Curtis that qualified for the U.S. Open and
dropped it.
Decided he didn't even want to play it.
Is the U.S. Open overrated, Curtis?
Can't say. I haven't played it, so we'll just have to, I guess, wait and see. Hopefully this year will be the year I can figure that one out.
Explain your timing. So you won the U.S. Amateur, played in the Masters, and then turned pro right after that. Did you have starts lined up? Is that the reason why?
Yeah, I just had a really good little lineup of events with Bay Hill and then the Masters to finish off my amateur career, and then it looked like I was going to get the maximum invites I could, which was 9. Not all of them were set in stone at that stage, but it was looking positive. So we decided, my team and I decided that it was probably more beneficial for me to turn pro and utilize them and try and actually get somewhere with them.
How old were you when you officially had a team, would you say?
It's one thing in Australian golf, amongst the organizations there, they sort of grind into you to take it as seriously as possible. And one of those things is, selecting a group of people that support you and are going to look after you. And so I would say probably from the age of 15, I knew that group. Obviously, family's included in that. But I've been with my coach from that day. I must have been 14, 15. I've been working with the same physio, strength and conditioning, all that stuff. It's all been the same guys from that point on, pretty much.
So what is give us your breakdown of your partner's game for this week. What did you see that you liked? What did you see that you didn't like? What's the full breakdown?
pretty much love everything, to be honest. You know, he's just an all-round great golfer.
That is bullshit. Walk in the cart leading between the two nines at we're half at the halfway point. You said to me that you think this partnership is falling apart.
Yeah, well,
I'm not even sure Tron knows that you said that.
Curtis said a lot of things this week.
Just, I was young.
Yeah, exactly. I was immature and didn't realize where I was going at that stage. You know, the lead had dropped after Ed started so well on Friday. But, the one thing I really like about Tron's game is that he doesn't really hit it out of play that often. Like, it's kind of in play all day. Yeah, he can queef it a little bit. But for the most part, it's pretty good.
The queef plays.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this is coming from a fader myself off the tee. You know, like, I love where Tron's going with the fade, like the pull fade.
Fade deep plays, man.
You know, like,
did you see him hit that house?
Yeah, that might have, I mean, like, I think I might have had something to do with that because I did get up to him on the tee and say, I want to see a draw. And I think,
it for sure drew.
Well, like myself, I really do think we're both not capable of hitting draws with driver. So
I can hit one with the 3-wood. I can't hit one with the driver.
That's the same with me. Yeah. You know, like, so I think that he can put that on me.
So give. I want to hear you kind of your breakdown. What lesson would you give Tron, and what lesson would you give me for our games?
Tron, I would place him on a chipping green between 10 and 40 yards, and I'd just tell him that he needs to be more aggressive with like his stroke because quite often when he's like got a touchy feely shot, he actually like kind of overdoes it, and even some of the shots that he hits like well. They just kind of don't have like they don't have aggression to them, so they kind of come up short, or they don't quite carry far enough. So that would be my
or they roll out too much because I haven't put enough spin on it.
Yeah. So it's kind of speed relative, I think. But Tron's a pretty good putter. He gets around the greens. Like when he's actually on the green, he putts pretty well.
That XO has been a treat to you.
Yeah,
it really has.
And I didn't even putt that well this week. But
but I can see like he's got control of that. My leg putting was good. So and as I said, he kind of keeps it in play. So there's nothing like jumping out at me. There's definitely stuff we could work on on his long game. But I definitely think like he would gain a lot of strokes from 10 to 40 yards. And then you, Solly, I think we just need to see a little bit more control. Like I like you're the opposite with the full swing to Tron. You're really aggressive. But I think that more often than not doesn't work out for you. I think when I see you control it a little bit more off the tee, I see you in play a whole lot more.
Which is the opposite advice my caddy gave me yesterday.
That's true. That's
just
true.
Just send it, bro.
He was backing off it, and he was all over the place. And then he started swinging. We don't have to get into it.
Yeah.
Tron, what advice would you give Curtis on his game?
I need it every week.
Tron Stockton Jr.
You got it. We talked about it yesterday. You got that little, it comes out once a round.
Yeah. I got a little miss with my wedges at the moment. It's long left, and unfortunately, it gets me in trouble at the moment. So I think as soon as I start getting that out.
I'm totally, you're 21 years old going on 48 years old.
21 in earth years.
Yeah. Earth years, yeah.
In earth years.
Yeah, you're Randy wise, says you're
his soul is
years.
About 6,000 to 7,000 years old. He may have walked up out of the oceans.
Wow.
My mom legitimately didn't believe that you're 21.
Kind of don't believe it. This is kind of your first full, you're playing the full season on the web tour this year, your first full like length of time experience in the U.S. What's your impression been of professional golf in the U.S. so far playing the web.com tour?
Of the web.com, it's just like it's a crazy, crazy tour in the fact that everyone's just so hungry to get somewhere, which is obviously the PGA Tour. After playing invites out there, it's super competitive, obviously, but there's like a different mentality on the web to get to that point. So I don't know what changes between it, but I guess guys are just searching for that better lifestyle that the PGA Tour has to offer.
What has been something like culturally in the United States that has surprised you? You go to some pretty interesting places.
Just
on the
how big a rush everyone's in.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like people in Australia are just slow. Like they just do things slowly and take their time compared to over here. Everything's about I think everything's more about being fast and getting things done quickly, which has its benefits for sure. But I definitely would say that like culture back home is a lot more relaxed, which I kind of like.
Everything except the pace of play, probably.
Yes, yes, the pace of play, but that's everywhere worldwide. We need pace of play to go up everywhere.
How many times have you been to Methodical this week, your favorite coffee shop in Greenville?
I would say I've definitely ticked over my my whatever they call it when you've been there. I'm going to get a free coffee.
Punch card?
Yeah, my punch card. Yeah, there you go. I'm going to get a free coffee for sure, I reckon, if I go back tomorrow morning. So I'm going to say probably like 8 times with multiple like purchases at each time.
So you are able to have a meth head.
Yeah, the big meth head.
Yeah, that's me, the meth head.
You are an absolute coffee fanatic. Is that fair to say?
Yes, 100%.
Where does that come from and what drives that?
I'm definitely not as big a fanatic as someone like Matt Goggin.
Really?
I've found. Well, Matt just pretty much, I'm going to say, knows everything there is to know about coffee. Like, if he ever decides to open a coffee shop, I'll be there every day. But yeah, I guess it's like coffee's really big in Australia. Like it's a real cultural thing. Like we really get around it. It's like part of your daily ritual is to go get a coffee kind of thing. Whether it's picking one up before work or going late at night, like it's just, that's just what it is. And I think once I started traveling a lot, I started realizing that the coffee wasn't quite as good like where I was going, like everywhere else. And so it then became like a passion of mine to search for like the really good coffee. And then from there, I just started gaining more and more interest in like how it all works. And yeah, now I can't deal with life without it.
Not a Starbucks guy. Not a chain coffee guy when
you go. Completely against Starbucks. We're out on Starbucks.
Where does your, do you do research before you go to towns as to what the best coffee shops are?
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of, when I know I'm going on like stints where I'm going to be playing 3 or 4 events or whatever it may be, I will, before I even go to the place, I'll know where I want to check out. It doesn't mean I know if they're like 100% good, but I've basically got a note in my phone of everywhere I have been and everywhere I should go check out. So like we're going to Nashville next week. I've already got, I think, 3 or 4 locations that I want to go try. Makes my life easy. And then from there, like I think after a few days, I'll know which one's like the king and which one I'll go to for the rest of the week.
It's kind of just a hobby probably more than anything, right? Like yeah, you guys have so much free time out here that it's probably good to get out and just do something. It doesn't really matter what it is.
Absolutely. It definitely is a good time killer. But yeah, it is a hobby for sure. It's a great way, you know, like if you've got, I'm one of those people that just, as soon as like Thursday comes around, I'm just super excited to get out and play like tournament rounds. I hate like having like an afternoon tea time because I feel like once I get up, I just like, I'm just waiting and it seems like time takes forever. So it's a good way for me to, you know, get up, go get a coffee. It might take 20 minutes to get there. Who knows how long I'll be there for, as long as I can be normally, and then to the golf course. And usually that's the way I kill my time in the morning, and sometimes I do the flip after a round. So it's a nice, like as you said, a little hobby.
Sometimes you do both.
Yeah, yeah. If I've got like a late morning tea time, perfect. I can get there beforehand and afterwards.
So we talked a bit about this week about what your practice routine is like. So walk us through like a typical day at home in Orlando, what a typical day of practice looks like.
Yeah, so fortunately, I live with like a really good buddy, Ryan Ruffles, who's also another young Australian professional. So like, you know, most of the time when we're home, we're both there, which is great because it's awesome fun having someone to practice with. But like on a normal day, I usually try to hit anywhere. I'm going to say depending on the day. Sometimes in Orlando it's hot, like summer it's hard to hit as many balls, so I'll say like I can hit anywhere between 300 and 600 balls a day.
How long does that take? I don't know how many golf balls that is. That sounds like a lot.
I'm gonna
to me.
Say it probably, I like fire balls off pretty quick, so I would say like over the course of a day it might take 2 to 3 hours like in total of just hitting balls. I'm pretty quick, as I said, so I don't really muck around. And then, yeah, so you do that, and then always, you know, do an hour or so on the pitching green and an hour on the putting green. And then always, nearly 9 times out of 10, try and go out and play, whether it may be 9 holes or 18 holes. I'm fortunate at Arleworth, we, you know, we can whip around in carts in, you know, depending on the day, 2 hours, sometimes, you know, like even quicker. So, like, it's one thing that is so different to, like, Aussie golf is pretty much no one plays in carts back home in Australia. So, it's a nice change. It's certainly different, but it definitely helps practicing.
So you're just sitting out there. Do you guys have a special section of the range at Isleworth for? It's like you and Charles Howell the Third and
yeah, Ruffles. It's like it's a double-sided range, and usually one side's like actually like being set up for all the members. So we can utilize either side, but basically we just go to whatever side's into the wind. I much prefer hitting balls into the wind, and the range is just at a length where, like, driver's debatable on whether it will get to the other side. So you need to know that, obviously, you're not putting anyone in danger, and so hitting into the wind's usually just where I'll go. But we do have the freedom of kind of, I guess, going where we want on the range.
And then you were talking about your team earlier. So your coach is back in Australia.
Yeah, my coach is back in Australia. Craig Bishop, he's been awesome. Really, I'm going to say, pretty much taught me everything I know relative to the golf swing. He's a great golf coach. He is super technical, but that suits me perfectly because I think about golf that way.
How does it work being 8,000 miles away from him?
It's definitely interesting. Like when I was like an amateur living out of Perth still, at home, like I would just sort of pop in and, you know, whether I had a lesson with him or I just went next door and he had maybe 10 minutes spare between lessons and he'd come over and like help me out. That's definitely been a change because obviously I don't have access to that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's funny though, you know, like his coaching method is, it's based kind of around the golfing machine, which obviously a lot of people know. It's a really specific style of coaching. And then he also did a lot of stuff with Mac O'Grady. So fortunately for me, like whilst I learnt a lot of my coach's stuff, like there's a really exact equation of what he's looking for. And I kind of know what that is. So when I'm away, I don't feel the need to like be calling him weekly or whatever it may be. Like I'm lucky if I speak to him once every month.
So you kind of just self-correct. He's taught you almost how to be your own coach.
That's exactly right. And that I think that is the key to like a that's what I think is the key to a great golf coach is
you take ownership of your own game.
If they can coach themselves out of a job, that's the best attribute because I mean, unless you're one of the top players in the world earning, you know, so much money, you can't really afford to have your coach with you all the time. And although we've all got FaceTime and all this stuff, like you can send video footage so easily now, it's still not the same. So to be able to, yeah, self-assess and re-correct like things that are going wrong whilst you're out is like a really, I think it's a really important attribute to have as a player.
Do you have like a specific habit or bad habit of some kind that you're always kind of working through or something you're kind of working through at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I always fight one thing. So we kind of have 4 checkpoints in my golf swing and 3 of the 4 of them usually don't really move that much. There's one in particular that I always have to maintain, particularly when I'm on the road a lot, because by like the 3rd or 4th week on playing, you know, your mindset kind of goes from just getting the ball in the hole rather than, you know, like when you're practicing at home, you're kind of always working on things and making it look pretty. So like one of the things I do is my pelvis kind of shifts forward as I take the club back, which makes me stand upright in my swing. And that causes a few smaller issues, like the club starts to drop in back behind me because the plane gets shallower and then all, yeah, there's a whole heap of things that can come from it. So yeah, so as long as I maintain that pelvis kind of staying back and my spine angle like more over the top of the ball, I tend to keep in good stead, I guess.
I've never thought about spine angle or pelvis or anything in a golf swing.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's going to help my swing a lot. throw a couple more thoughts.
I don't think
in
I'm capable of even being my own coach for, you know, hours at a time, much less days at a time.
What? So you won the U.S. Amateur. You've played professional golf for a year and a half now. Is that right? 2 years now?
And the Asia Pacific Amateur.
Literally,
right?
I ticked off a year like only a month ago.
Okay, so just over a year. What is the biggest? Do you see like a gap in what helped you win the U.S. Amateur and what you need to be a successful pro and thing like a specific thing that you need to grow and improve upon?
It's interesting because like obviously USM's a match play event, so you do have breathing space in match play. You can put bad holes in and whatever. So like something I know that I've really got to work on, which was really good that year in particular, 2016, was my driving. Like I was in play all day, every day. And that just counts for so much, like on these golf courses, particularly on the PGA Tour, because they are brutal to be playing out of the rough and out of the trees. Like you do not want to be there. So that's one thing that I want to kind of sharpen back up and get back to maybe where I was, because I mean, it also opens doors to, you know, playing more aggressively when you're hitting it straighter. You know, like I could hit driver where maybe some guys were hitting 3 irons to lay up because I felt comfortable. And yeah, that has a big impact on, you know, how close you can hit it to the hole. So
you're 21. You live in you're from Australia. You have an Australian accent. You're a professional golfer. What's dating life like in Orlando?
No good. It's a senior's home, I'm going to say. It's like a big retirement village. Particularly in the area we live. But yeah, no, I need to. I think I'm going to have to invest some more time into that. It's not been great since I've been here.
Did you consider going to play in Europe or going to play in Asia?
Absolutely.
Versus the US?
So in 2016, that year, I won the WA Open, which is like just a pro event on the Aussie PGA Tour, and I should say the PGA Tour of Australasia. I kind of was at a point where I was feeling ready. Like I felt like I needed to give it a crack to see where I was at, like on that stage. I'd had like a couple of other good finishes that year, so I was kind of thinking, now's the time to have a go. And I had no pressure on myself to turn pro. I decided that I was going to enter Q school. So I entered Japan and Europe because I'd played in Japan and I noticed like the tours run really well. They play for pretty good purses.
You like their clothing.
I like their clothing.
Yeah, you wear all the Callaway Japan stuff that looks pretty
it's
wild.
It's awesome. It's pretty wicked. And then, yeah, I just loved Japan. So I was kind of like, I'll definitely give that a crack. It's kind of good playing Japan out of Australia too, because similar time zone. And then Europe, I had a lot of advice from guys like Brett Rumford, another one's Jason Scrivener, you know, like guys that I've grown up sort of watching and you know, starting to practice with in my later amateur days. They were all in Europe and, you know, like they said how much fun it was and, just that it's a great tour, you know, like you really at times get thrown out of your comfort zone with all the different things like language barriers and stuff like that. So Europe was somewhere I was really interested in traveling and playing. But yeah, when USM happened, that kind of shut that down pretty quick.
You were kind of thrust in, we were talking about it earlier, you were kind of thrust in being from Perth. Where you, I mean, it's a pretty remote place. You had to travel,
yeah,
you know, 5-6 hours most of the time to.
Yeah, very. So Perth's obviously one of, I think it is the most isolated city in the world. It's so as juniors and amateurs, when you start taking it seriously and like you want to actually play big golf events, the travel becomes pretty significant. Whether it's coming to the US to play the amateur events here in summer, or if it's just going to Brisbane or Sydney, you know, like it's always like a 5-hour flight. It's never driving. So we learn really early how to travel and how to handle that. I started, I think my first interstate trip for an event like on my own, I was 15, and you literally, yeah, you just go to like your hotel and that's it. Like, you just, there's other kids there and you're just like, alrighty, let's go. And so, as I said, I think we learn really quickly how to travel, which I think's been a great advantage for me. I think you can see it in results, particularly like a lot of the young Australians are from Western Australia. Like, you've got Minji Lee, who's on the LPGA, Hannah Green on the LPGA, Oliver Goss obviously had a stellar amateur career, Brady Watt, another one, and now you've got guys like Minwoo Lee, who are also breaking through in like the amateur scene. So I definitely think it has a pretty big impact.
What was so you played as an amateur in the Masters in 2017. Did you stay in the crow's nest?
I actually only stayed in it for one night. I was told that it's pretty small.
The coffee was no good.
yeah, the coffee was not good. Yeah, so I was told it was pretty small beforehand, and that like you weren't really that separated from the other amateurs if they were all willing to stay there. So my family was obviously there that week out to watch. They rented a house nearby, so I actually just stayed in the house. And then I think it was the Tuesday or the Monday night, when Tuesday night I think they had the amateur dinner, I camped out in the crow's nest with the other boys. All of us stayed in there, and it's obviously an amazing experience. Like, it's something so few people have done, so that's really cool.
And fewer, because you took up two of the exemptions instead of one.
And then, yeah, but the thing is, it's not ideal. Like, if you're off in the afternoon and someone in the crow's nest, like one of the other amateurs, is off early in the morning, if their alarm goes off, everyone wakes up, you know, and that's not my jam.
So what do you, so we're sitting here now, this is in May. What do you have to do? What is needs to improve the most in your game between now and the end of the season to make sure you're on the PGA Tour next year?
Just a bit of consistency. Where my golf is good, it's great. Like, it looks really good. I'm just made actually a few equipment changes in the last few weeks with Callaway, and like, it's looking really positive. Like, I think my bag's set up in a way now where I feel really comfortable. Like, I feel like there's nothing there that can be improved. So that's exciting. And you know, the start of this season, it's kind of on and off. You have like a lot of off weeks in amongst a lot of tournaments. So I think like I'm just slowly warming up. I've just come off two missed cuts, but that's a very short story. I'm actually super excited. It's probably, in all seriousness, after missing two cuts, I'm probably as excited as I have been in 8 months to play golf, because there's so much really good stuff going on.
And you get the NLU podcast bump now after that.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Where does the BMW Charity Pro-Am rank in as far as web events that you've played so far?
Well, it's definitely been the funnest so far, hands down.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's been the funnest so far. The courses were pretty good amongst the three of them. It's definitely an interesting format to play three courses, have to play them practice rounds and stuff, and when all the conditions are so different on each course, it's kind of interesting to get your head around. But yeah, it's a good tour. It's we've definitely traveled to some interesting places so far this year, like obviously going to the Bahamas and then South America, Panama, Colombia. It's all been great to, you know, see new places.
Ready to get on the road though, and
yeah,
I'm
super excited just to get into like the thick of things and then really, you know, start playing golf.
We'll probably follow up with you in like 17 weeks when you've been when you've made your way across the United States.
Yeah, and we'll see how you feel then.
As far as PGA Tour, or you know, kind of guys that kind of been mentors to you. You talked about that a little bit earlier, but really anybody else that sticks out, or anybody else that you really look up to?
Yeah,
Tron.
Tron, I mean, of course. Yeah, it's absolutely standout. Obviously, the Aussies I think are a really tight knit bunch. Like, I've played practice rounds with Jace, and obviously hung out with Jace a bit. And then Adam Scott has been awesome. Leash has been awesome. Even like Leash's caddy, Matt Kelly's been great. You know, all those guys have been really good, and I think they're great with all the youngsters, particularly Australians. But yeah, I was fortunate enough to have a great like caddy. Oh, and Jeff Ogilvie, another one. I was fortunate enough to have like a great caddy out there last year with me in Matt Tritton, also known as Bussy. He really like helped me kind of learn the ropes, I guess, and obviously had a big impact on how I was playing out on course as well. But yeah, there's a heap. I mean, another notable is fan favorite Zach Blair. I know you guys
heard of him. Friend of the program.
Are in familiar on Zach Blair. Shout out to the Buck Club. Another one that was surprising, and it just came up through, I guess, like a mutual friend, was Ian Poulter. So Ian Poulter was really good when I first when I won the USAM. I met Poulter's caddy Terry Mundy because he was caddying for one of my mates, Sam Horsfield. And then later down the track, I ended up playing with Poulter in Macau, and Poulter was great. He really looked after me, took me out to dinner. Actually, me and my dad out to dinner a few times. And then, yeah, so be it. We just ended up traveling and played in Abu Dhabi and Dubai at the same event. And yet again, you know, like he was great. Just, you know, making sure I was all right and kind of including me on things that he didn't have to.
He seems like he's almost kind of playing a role a little bit. Is that what you saw or not? Like, I know he rubs a lot of people in the States the wrong way, but it's just, I don't know. To me, it just seems like it's a bit of an act almost, and he's just kind of a little chippy, and it's just kind of how he is.
Yeah, I think the thing that gets Poulter, like, some haters is that he just says what he feels, which I think is a great, I think that's a great characteristic. Whether you're wrong or right, that's another story. But you know what, like, if people can't accept when someone says something that they don't like, so be it. I would like to think I'm kind of that way, so
you
that's
are
probably exactly well that's probably that's probably why we get along.
That's how I am too.
That's probably how we why we get along, you know. So yeah, but he was really like really great for me early on, so much so that the first event I played over here, Bay Hill, I wasn't feeling that great, and I had a really rough week. I actually got DQ'd. You know, he just said, look, mate, like, if you want to come round to my house in Orlando, I had nowhere to stay. I was in a hotel. He said, like, just come round and stay a few nights and just, you know, take a breath. So I went over to his house, and same thing. Yeah, he was just, like, awesome. So,
speaking of the haters, what do you have to say about to some of your haters out there?
I got no time for haters, Solly.
Well,
haters gonna hate.
The backstory, a friend of mine texted me and said, good luck with Curtis Luck this week. That guy's an asshole. And you, like, were racing through your mind trying to figure out when you were an asshole at Brookside Country Club playing a practice round sometime. So
yeah, there's a reason I can't remember him. It's because he's not important.
All right. On that note, we're going to get you out of here. We're going to grab some dinner. But thanks for putting up with us this week. And I hope you had fun. And I hope you're looking forward to the rematch we're going to have this fall when you guys come to the Web Tour Championship.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Get it rolling. And then we're going to fire it up at, like, the Dunhill or Pebble Beach,
yes,
or something in
yes
the coming year.
Step it up. Absolutely. Step it up. So, all right. Thank you, Curtis. With that, let's turn it over to our interview also with the fourth member in our group, Mr. Ed Lohr. All right, welcoming in now, Pardsy, my Pards, Mr. Edward Lohr. How you played today without us today? How did you even was it even worth teeing it up today?
I was barely tolerable. Luckily, I had two members of the Olympic curling team, gold medals.
My man Schuster.
Yeah, dude, those guys are rioting. You know, you don't get to play too many times with Olympians that you look like you're a better athlete than. So, you know.
The second most famous Schuster you played with this week, is that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
So we got served some humble pie by Team Carter. I can't help but feel responsible. You made the cut, and Curtis Luck did not. It's really hard for me to look at myself in the mirror and not feel responsible for our team not making the cut.
But you should feel responsible.
I know. Absolutely. I mean, 100% agree. I mean, I could have made a few more birdies, but I think I made maybe 15 in 3 days. So, I mean, yeah, solid. I don't know if we'd have made the cut, but certainly to get beat by these dumbasses by that bad, we got to do better.
I was going
to
say, I don't think it was the fact that y'all got beat. It was the fact that
we got drunk.
We got trounced. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a lack of drama in the situation. I think the handicaps were slightly off, but I don't think that's why we lost. I mean, if we were had our normal handicaps, we still would have gotten beat.
I normally get something. Five off of you.
Four or five, and it wouldn't have made a difference. I didn't bring the game, but we had fun. Is that what's your normal pro-am experience like? Was this a little different than that?
You know, you guys are great. I mean, obviously, what you guys do, all of us appreciate it, and you know, I always appreciate good banter. I mean, what the hell's a 6-hour round if you don't have good banter? So, no, that was great. I enjoyed every moment of it, even if you did play like a dog.
What was your reaction when I bladed my wedge shot on the very first hole of the tournament?
Honestly, I was like, man, most scratches can hit the green from 100 yards, especially after piping it. You know, I mean, you piped it 280 down the middle. I'm like, okay, well.
I would have been more concerned after the second hole.
After the one that was a little bit of a chili pepper out to the right?
Yeah.
So, it was, you were obviously a little rattled early. You played – You played pretty good yesterday. You had stretches at the Cliffs where you made some birdies, but obviously you hit the ball a long way, so you need to play the par fives well. Furman only had two of them, and you were a little out of sorts that first day.
It's hard when you don't get any pops, and your mindset for my score to count is I have to beat you on the hole. So otherwise, like, I pretty much count on you to make par every time. So I'm like firing for birdies, and when it goes sideways, it's easy to get out of hand pretty quickly, but I was rattled. I'm not gonna lie.
It's kind of like the old adage of, oh, I gotta hit it, you know, if I don't hit it hard enough, the putt's not gonna go in. Well, that's like one of the worst theories in golf. It's hard to do it, to just feel like, oh, I'm just gonna play regular golf, you know, obviously when you're playing alongside a tour pro, but that's how you play best. You don't play best.
You gotta build around.
Yeah, firing it at every pin and doing stupid stuff.
It's a learning experience.
No
doubt.
What
did you think of Uncle Tron's game?
Tron is a solid. I'd take Tron anywhere as a 7. I mean, that is a solid 7.
I didn't sandbag that either. That
no,
was,
that's legitimate.
No, but you did a good job. Everything. You did a good job, you know, with most of your stroke holes. So you're a good 7, Tron.
I mean, I think, like I said, we usually play off maybe 5 between the two of us. And I think that was not Tron's best game. I think if he would have brought your A game this week, you wouldn't beat us by about 20.
I didn't hit my irons all that well. I played better yesterday, but it's just Curtis said, quit focusing on which holes you're getting pops on and just play golf.
Yeah,
and that helped me out yesterday.
How did the mizzen in Maine affect you?
It was a little constricting Thursday, Friday. Honestly, if it's fall and it's crisp and, you know, 60s, 70s, it was the humidity that just absolutely killed me. Like, if you get a little sheen going in the sweat and then – that stuff gets a little wet, it's okay, but if it gets a lot wet, it's a disaster.
The biggest question people are dying to answer is, what did you think of Big Randy's reporting?
Top notch. I don't know how Randy's not on a national affiliate. I mean, and the props. This prop game is incredible. I mean, it's just top notch, Randy.
I just worked with what I had. Just come up with something each day for you.
Trying to inject some drama in it.
We were rustling around in the woods and happened to find that that broken club.
You were searching hard. I don't know what you guys were going to do if you found that edge. Y'all probably would have reshafted it and played with it yesterday.
So if you were – all right, let's do it person by person here. Start with Tron. If you were to give advice on how to improve our games, what's the – you gave – first of all, I played so bad the first day, you demanded we go to the range and do 10 minutes. But starting with Tron, what would be your lesson for Tron?
Tron needs a lot of – he needs a lot of short game work around the greens. You know, he does pretty well off the tee. He actually gets the ball a little far forward, so he kind of gets swipey and hits those, you know, what do you call them, a queef out to it.
it's a scrape queef.
Scrape queef. But really, other than that, you hit the ball pretty well. But your short game variety is
lacking.
It's very lacking. Yeah, absolutely.
And for me.
Oh, man, we need some practice, Solly. If you're going to maintain your quest to try to qualify next year, based on what I saw, it all starts with your setup. You aim about 30 yards right, and then you kind of hit either a straight pull, or you hit a pull hold on. So, you know, for a scratch player, I mean, that's kind of supposed to be an elite player. There's a lot going wrong.
God,
he's more like a Joe Flacco?
Moments of brilliance, splashes of brilliance. Yeah.
My comfort zone is around a 2. I'm not. I went into this knowing my handicap was artificially low. So
yeah.
I'm solid as a 2. I'm not a scratch player.
Yeah, you know, obviously playing with pros makes it tougher. You know, you guys haven't like you said, this is the first competitive round you've played since high school.
Right.
It's just a way different element, and obviously you guys realize that. Kind of hopefully appreciate what we do every week.
That's kind of what I want to get into too, is just watching you guys grind out here and seeing you shot 2 under at Furman and seeing where you stood on the leaderboard after that was kind of, I mean, I knew scores were low out here, but that was kind of shocking to me.
The margin for error is...
It doesn't exist.
There is no margin for error.
And when you came out at the Cliffs on Friday and birdied the first 4 holes, and we gained 1 shot during that time period, I was like,
you knew we were in trouble.
How do you guys do this, man? I really don't actually understand it. So for those that don't know, kind of what's your either 2 or 3 minute kind of background into your amateur career, into your professional career? What's your story?
As a professional, I'm the consummate journeyman. I've played 9 different tours from the PGA Tour to non-existent mini tours. I've played in 28 countries. I've always been good enough to keep the dream alive. I've had some flashes of brilliance. I've won twice on the web. I've had my card a couple of times. I was an elite college player. I was a 4-time All-American. I won 10 tournaments between college and amateur golf. So played a Walker Cup. So I was obviously I didn't think I'd be playing the web tour trying to scrape by at age 40. I thought I'd be one of those guys that, won 5 times and had $50 million like we all do. But, I'm still thankful that I get to keep trying. And I'm still hopeful that I can, achieve more success. But it's just a really hard deal. And honestly, if I knew probably how hard it was 17 years ago, I don't know if I would have done it. It's just... at the end of the day, the math works out to play the PGA Tour. It's basically 5 guys a year, in the entire world. So, how stupid can you be, really, to try it?
And so, what was your experience like when you got your tour card? Did you feel like your game was well set up to succeed on that tour?
What year did you get it the first time?
The first time was 2012, so the end of 2011. So, I'd been a pro for 12 years. I'd played in Asia, and played a couple times out here. So I thought I was well adjusted, but I got the shit kicked out of me. The one that really hurt was when I got my card back in 14, because I'd played really well out here. I'd finished 4th on the money list. I'd won. I had like 8 top 10. So I was coming off a great year.
Going back, what you had to work on.
I played even worse. So
after the first time, what did you feel like, all right, I need to improve on this after 2012?
Really, I felt like my mid and long iron game. The PGA Tour is such a different animal than the web tour, or certainly mini tours. Mini tours, and here it's more kind of nice country club golf, if you're lucky. So you're hitting a lot of short irons. Where on the PGA Tour, the average second shot's like 175, so it's, a lot of 5, 6, 7 irons, and it's a lot different. You're not trying to necessarily shoot 25 under out there. You're trying to shoot 10. So it's a way different ball game.
It's kind of shocking to see this week. I think the tournament's concluding as we're speaking. Michael Arnaud was not in the event.
What an amazing story. I mean, I know Michael real well from the Adams Tour, and he's been...
How old is he?
He's probably 34-ish. Played at, where did he play? Either Lamar or Stephen F. I was somewhere down there, but he's from South Texas. Has always had the ability to shoot really low. He's probably won 4 or 5 times on the Adams Tour. But man, what a life change! This is an actual life changing moment that we're witnessing. Really,
he was not in the event till Wednesday. Kent Bull withdrew, and he was in Oklahoma. I think getting ready to play at
the Adams
Tour event.
Tour on start. He was probably about. They got rained out on Wednesday, so he probably was waiting on his first round tee time.
Comes up, no practice rounds.
And now he's, 75% of the way to a tour card now?
Yeah.
He played the front 9 twice. And granted, it's par 35. He shot 55.
He shot 27, 28.
He shot 28 today?
28 today.
He shot 27 on Friday?
With a bogey.
With a bogey on 9.
And he shot 28 today.
What was his best? I want to see what his best ball was. Probably about 24.
Oh, that is sick.
So yeah, that's kind of what I don't know. I see like guys like you just still like chasing the dream and still grinding out here, knowing that week is around the corner for essentially anyone.
Absolutely, I mean, and especially out here, if you win a tournament, you're already more than halfway to a tour card. I mean, the number is usually 160-ish, so it's
You had the yellow bib this week.
Yeah, I'm off to a solid start. I mean, I'm basically, if I win a tournament, I've got my card. I've made enough money. I've made just about 90,000. So it's just hard. It's hard to keep chasing the dream when you're just trying to scrape by and you're not having a ton of success. But it's also hard to give it up when you know that you're only 4 days away. Or, you know, I see all my contemporaries that, you know, my record was as good as, you know, Charles Kuchar, Jonathan Bird, all these guys that I grew up playing with. And, you know, they're still doing very well. So it's like the dream is still there.
What do you see? I mean, is there something you look at with those guys' games you see as a big difference between yourself and them?
Looking back, they were just a lot more consistent. I was always a very streaky player. So, you know, when I got on a good streak, I could win a turn. I could beat anybody. But, you know, consistency, especially with ball striking day to day on the PGA Tour, is what you have to have. You know, putting maybe wins you a tournament, but ball striking kind of keeps you out there, and that's kind of always where I've struggled a little bit.
It's timing too, right? You just got to get hot at the right time. Sure. Have you felt like that's been kind of the thing for you over the last decade or so? You just haven't been able to string it together at the right time, or?
That's a really good question, Tron. I mean, I've had some really good years on many tours. Now, would they have translated to, you know, if I was playing the PGA Tour? I don't know. I mean, like 2008, I played the Gateway Tour. I never left my home. You know, I won 4 times and I finished second 3 times out of 10 events. I mean, I made $120,000. I never left my house. So, but I don't know. Would that have translated to, you know, playing somewhere in front of 30,000 people? I have no answer to that.
What was it? What was your professional status? You have triplets. You have 6-year-old triplets. Mm-hmm. What was your professional status at the time when you had baby triplets?
I was a conditional player out here, and I was in. We used to have a tournament outside of Pittsburgh at a terrible course, and it was like the best opening round I'd played all year. I'd shot, I think, 67, and I was in third or fourth. And my mom called and said, you've got to come home. And so I drove like a maniac to the airport, got on an airplane, went home, and my kids were born 2 days later. That was September 5th of 11. So I was kind of doing that. And then I was about to start tour school, and lo and behold, I got my tour card the first time that year, which that had to have something to do with it.
I was going
to
say, how did you manage that?
I don't know.
So were you invigorated, scared shitless, anxious, excited, all the above.
All the above. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
What do you remember the most about? How many years did you play on the Asian Tour?
A little over 5.
Did you live in the States when you played on the Asian Tour? Or did you?
I did. Yeah. I lived here, and then I would take like 4 or 5 trips for, you know, 3 to 5 weeks at a time.
What are your favorite stories about playing on the Asian Tour?
You know, I really enjoyed it. It's a lot like the European Tour. You have a lot more camaraderie because you're always staying together and, you know, taking 2-hour bus rides. You know, I'll never forget the first event I played after I got my card in Malaysia was in Burma or Myanmar, which is like, you know, it's like one of the poorest countries in the world, but it was a military junta. I think it still is. Yeah. But one of the colonel's sons played on the tour, so we got treated like royalty. But, you know, I remember pulling up. I'd had a 24-hour flight to get there, you know, and get to the course, and I'm playing with a couple of buddies from home, and we keep seeing these armed guards with AK-47s, and, you know, they're basically guarding the perimeter of the golf course to keep the peasants out. So, I mean, this is my first time, you know, I've been to Malaysia for Q school, but that's really not that different. But I was like, man, this is just a little different. And then, you know, like India with the cold cows in the roads and
You can't move the cows
when
you get
in
the roads.
You know, so just sitting there on your bus going, man, get the damn cows out. Can we, like, move them along just a little bit? So it's, you know, it was a great life experience. I really did enjoy it.
So you did 5 straight years out there?
I did. So okay. I would play, you know, our season was kind of would start early in the year. And then during our summer, we wouldn't play because it was the rainy season. And then we would play in the fall. And then I kept doing Q school, and I didn't ever make it to finals or anything. So I just kept going back, and it actually wasn't bad. I think the most I played was maybe 21 tournaments, and then, you know, I had the summers off, so I'd come play some stuff over here and hang out. And
financially, with all the travel costs, dealing with traveling such great distances, did that make sense for you financially to play those Asian tours? Were you able to make that work, or what was that kind of like financially?
You know, back then I was single. I didn't really have that much overhead, and I had some nice years where I made. I think the most I made was like 160. So yeah. I was able to turn a profit, and sure. You know, I was lucky enough that I had a group of guys that helped me out if I needed it.
Cool. Yeah. What are things like that you do? You pick up anything from kind of this new school guys that come out, these young web tour guys that, you know, we played with Curtis Luck this week. Obviously, you guys are at two totally different ends of your career. Are you still at the phase where you kind of learn things from guys that you play with in any way?
Yeah, I know they all hit the shit out of it.
Yeah. So do you, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm still above average, but I'm way, way more average than I used to be.
But yeah. You're still hitting the same distance.
I was still probably kind of hitting the same distance, but man, yeah, I do. I enjoy hanging out with the young guys. I mean, they obviously have a, you know, kind of a spark for what we're trying to do. And I still try to pick some of their brains. They're all so good with the technology and the TrackMans, and I'm getting better. I use one. I don't have one like most of these guys. Somehow they all have one. I don't know, but. It's fun. It's fun to hang out with them. I got a couple of them, Taylor Moore and Kevin Doherty, that I hang out with a lot. And I just, you know, they're good energy.
Do they pick your mind at all? Do you find many of the young guys come to you for advice?
There's a couple. I actually thought it would probably be more. And looking back, really, if I had to do it over again, I would have found more of a mentor. I talk a lot now with Phil Blackmar. And I really respect his opinion. I think he's really smart. You know, he didn't have a great career, but he played on tour for 25 years. Well, some people wouldn't call. I'd call anything if you played 25 years. Sure. That's a great career. So anyway.
Now he probably watches more golf than just about anybody.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Too.
So not very many of them. I mean, those guys that I hang out with, they'll ask me a question, you know, about travel or where to stay or, you know.
Yeah.
And it's obviously some – but I do stuff a little different on the golf course, mainly because I'm left-handed, so it's not a whole lot of knowledge going back and forth.
Where does the BMW Charity Pro-Am rank up there with web events, like annual events that you play, as far as how much you enjoy it, the golf course, is the whole experience?
It's grown to be a top-notch event. Now, I mean, obviously the days get long with the Pro-Am format, but it's something that you know is, you know, it's part of the week. It's like AT&T, you know. Pebble Beach, it's an ass kicking, but it's a great event. It's same as this week. You know, obviously on our tour, the money is so important, and this is one of the, I think, top three or four purses, so everybody comes. You know, with all you fancy amateurs here, they treat us very well, so it's turned into a great event, and Greenville is a great town, great food, you know, nice people, and you know, they've done a good job with Thornblade. It's gotten better. And then, I love the cliffs. I mean, that's by far my favorite place. Those greens are sensational. And then, you know, Furman's a good little layout. You can tell it's kind of a university course. It doesn't get a lot of love. But
I think within the first 5 minutes of us sitting down for dinner on Tuesday night or Wednesday night, whenever we did, your face, you already were mentioning the greens at the cliffs, and I was like, all right, this guy's going to come out. You birdied the first four holes in the cliffs, and I was like, getting ready to sound the alarms for 59 watch. Yeah. I thought it was coming. So you roomed with Charles Howell at Oklahoma State, right?
I did.
Do you have any favorite Charles Howell story? He's a friend of the program.
I know. He's a big fan of the program. I've known Charles I first ran into Charles when, we were either 9 or 10. I'm a year older at the Future Masters, and he used to play those Yonex drivers, and they would come up to the bottom of his chin. So he's been kicking my ass ever since. But, you know, Charles wasn't very domesticated when he came to school. So I remember, and my mom would probably tell the story better, that so the end of Charles's freshman year, his mom came to kind of help him move out, and he was moving in with us, and we had a tournament in Ardmore, which is about 2 hours south of Stillwater. And Debbie, she didn't show up till like the second day. And my mom was like, Debbie, where have you been? And she said, well, I've been doing laundry for 2 days. Every time Charles would run out of underwear and socks, instead of learning how to do laundry, he would just go buy more. So he had like 3 laundry bags full of underwear and socks.
They kept them all.
Yes. And his mom had been doing laundry for like two days straight before she got to the tournament.
Oh, man. All right. So if come this fall, you're going to be at the Web Tour Championship, I would imagine. Are you down for a rematch, me and you, versus Tron and Curtis?
Oh, there's, I mean, 100%. Just book it.
And if hopefully you're on your way to your PGA Tour card for next year, would you run it back for this event with the with the four of us again?
Sure, I would. Yeah? This would be great.
We weren't too distracting?
Again. No. Wait, you guys are awesome. And I listen, obviously most of us are love what you guys do. I'm excited I get to be on the pod. I mean, this is I listen to most of your stuff, and you know, you guys are great for the game.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
I just want to say from my perspective, you know, I kind of goofing around a little bit this week, how appreciative I was, you know, how approachable, and you were very willing to kind of go along with the absurdness of some of the stuff we were doing. So it was much appreciated from our perspective too. It was great getting to know you and also your wife who made the trip. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. So Randy spent the whole day with the Wags yesterday.
I was outside the ropes. Yeah. So I got to know everybody. It was nice. Yeah.
I knew you were into this when after you birdied those first four holes at Cliffs, you turned and were like, man, we can't gain anything on these guys.
I'm
like,
all right,
you're out here grinding for your card and somehow still care about this Team Solly versus Team Tron thing. So
we were going to make a move, man. It came out firing, and so did they.
I thought y'all were too.
Yeah, no moves to be made. Yeah. So
you feel like you're just not to delve back in too deep, but you feel like your game is kind of trending back upwards. Like you entered what last year? You were playing PGA Tour Latino America.
No, last I was year. Playing mini tours. Just I've been straight playing mini tours last year, basically. Yeah,
for the last.
I was never going to do. Those don't make sense for me with a, you know, wife and kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a little bit of status to where I was going to get into a couple of events out here, and you know, the Adams Tour was so good. It was basically, you know, the same as a Latino Tour, you know, for the economics. Home. I mean, so I was just doing that, and
then you finished what, second in Panama this year?
In Panama and fifth in Savannah.
So you see a very limited status coming into this year, and now.
Well, actually, I went back to Q school. I went through all three stages of Q school. I used my push cart in the first stage.
Nice. I think I remember seeing that on Twitter. Yeah,
I did it a couple of days in second stage, and I had a buddy do a couple of days, and then he did finals, and I finished, I think, 35th. So.
Okay.
I was kind of, you know, I was about.
So that gets you status the first.
It got me the first eight starts.
Okay, and then you. Parlayed that.
Then I've played nice enough to where I don't have to worry about it. I've pretty much got enough money to where I've already basically clinched my card for next year. So now we're just, you know, trying to catch a few hot weeks and get back up there.
I know you don't play there as your home course, and we didn't get to watch much of the Byron Nelson this week. But what are your thoughts on Trinity Forest? I know you've played the State Open out there and a little bit more out there as well, right?
Yeah, I think it's very unique. I think it's fun to play. We talked about it a little bit. When I played the State Open there, I'm pretty sure the greens were way firmer. I didn't see any of my balls have a chance to stop on the greens. And I know the tour's different. They want it to look good on TV and presented a good product to the players. But I would like for it to see it play in its normal state. I think it would be a way, you know, they wouldn't be shooting the grass off of it. Yesterday they really didn't with the wind. I mean, Charles shot a great round, 65, but, you know, really everybody else was – you know, kind of right around par.
Leishman shot 61, 66. That's
absurd. I mean, that's like the Web Tour. You know, you're not supposed to do that on the big tour.
That's nutty. Yeah. So, on behalf of our whole team, man, thanks for a great week. It was a lot of fun. I hope we don't get to do it again next year, because I hope you're out playing the Byron Nelson here at this time next year. But we can look forward to rematching again here this fall. And thanks a ton for having us, man.
Hopefully it's like you and T. Boone Pickens playing the AT&T Bowl next year.
That's right.
So, thanks, Evan. So,
cheers. Thanks, Evan.
Thanks.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!